The first time I felt a demon scratch at the walls of my mind, I was 8 years old. At first, it was just a faint whisper at the edge of hearing, easy enough to ignore. Then, one day, that whisper answered. Not with words I understood, but with a presence, something hungry pressing against the thin membrane of my thoughts. That's when I realized I was cursed, or blessed, Geared, depending on which fool you ask. They came for me soon after. I remember that day more clearly than any training drill, the acrid stench of fear in my nostrils, the distant shouts of my neighbors, the taste of blood where I'd bitten my tongue in panic. Witch, they called me. Mutant. The black ship arrived before the mob could decide whether to burn me or drown me in the town well. In a way, being taken by that ship was a mercy. At least, that's what I told myself as its lightless hull swallowed me whole, carrying me far from everything I'd ever known. The black ship. I'd heard whispers of these carrion vessels even before I truly knew what I was. Parents warned their children that the black ships would come for naughty boys, if only they knew how right they were. Inside, it was darker than a starless void. No windows, no sense of time or direction. My world reduced to the cold iron of a cell and the muted sobbing of other prisoners through the walls. We weren't passengers. We were cargo. They kept us sedated at first. I recall the sting of an injector pressed against my neck, then hazy days, or weeks, of numbed silence. When I finally regained some sense of self, I had no idea how long I'd been locked in that moving tomb. It could have been weeks. It could have been months. Time was meaningless in the void. Now and then I felt the distant rumble of the ship translating through the warp, or docking briefly, perhaps to take on more of our kind from other worlds. But sealed in darkness, I could only guess. The only measure of time I had were the nightmares and brief bouts of fitful waking in between. When the drugs wore off, the nightmares began in earnest. Some were just ordinary terrors dredged from my own mind. Others were not mine at all. I could feel them, skittering at the edges of my drug-fogged dreams, like sharks bumping a sinking ship. In one nightmare, I found myself adrift in a black ocean, unable to scream, while something immense with too many eyes circled below me. Its laughter, if you could call it that, rippled through the water and through my very bones. I thrashed awake just as those jaws closed around me, and for a moment I swore I still heard a fading echo of that laugh in the darkness of my cell. Each time I jolted awake screaming, a pair of cold, emotionless eyes watched from beyond the cell door. I often sensed an unsettling emptiness radiating from those watchers, a null aura that made my skin crawl even as it mercifully quieted the warp whispers for a moment. I would later learn these silent sentinels were the Sisters of Silence, soulless null maidens whose presence smothered psychic activity. They ensured none of us could unleash our witchery, even accidentally. Being near one was like plunging my mind into ice water, unnerving yet oddly relieving since nothing from the warp could reach us while they stood by. Occasionally, I caught a glimpse of the black ship's crew when they delivered our meager meals or dragged away the corpses of those who didn't survive the voyage. They were utterly silent. Some wore hooded robes marked with the twin-headed eagle of the Imperium. Others were clad head-to-toe in black plate armor. The latter carried themselves with the confident menace of professional killers. We called them the Black Sentinels. Perhaps they were there in case one of us, cargo, got ideas about turning our cell block into a warp-fueled slaughterhouse. If so, their presence worked. None of us dared do more than whimper. One time, a girl in the neighboring cell did lose control. Maybe the nightmares overcame her, or maybe she decided death was better than the unknown fate awaiting us. I woke to raw panic, shrieks and a garbled, guttural howl that didn't sound human. My skin prickled with the unmistakable chill of warp energy gathering nearby. Before I could even scuttle into a corner, the corridor lights outside my cell flashed a furious red. Booted footfalls thundered, distant shouts echoed in clipped high Gothic, and then a sudden suffocating hush fell, as if some great invisible vacuum had sucked the very sound and air out of the world. I recognized it instantly, the null aura of a Sister of Silence snuffing out the warp's reach. An otherworldly scream cut off, followed by a wet crunch that turned my stomach. The lights dimmed back to their sickly yellow. Silence returned. I didn't sleep at all after that. Instead, I sat curled in the dark, hugging my knees, trying to recall the prayers to the God Emperor my grandmother once taught me. "The Emperor protects," she'd whisper to me at bedtime. Down in the belly of that black ship, I wondered if even he could see me in all that darkness. I whispered those words anyway, half out of habit, half out of desperate hope they might ward away the next set of claws scratching at my mind. When the black ship finally docked, we were herded out, blinking into harsh light. Terra, holy Terra itself, the throne world. I might have felt awed had I seen anything beyond the spaceport's stone walls and armed guards. The air tasted of incense and engine exhaust. Beneath that, I sensed something else at the edge of consciousness, a constant psychic pressure, like standing near a roaring furnace. Much later, I learned it was the Astronomicon, the Emperor's psychic beacon blazing in the warp. But at that moment, I only knew that Terra felt hungry. They marched us into an immense chamber of cold marble and gilded sigils. The hall was cavernous, with a vaulted ceiling lost in shadow. Rows of golden Aquila emblems and faceless statues of imperial saints looked down from alcoves, their stone eyes judging us. Incense smoke curled around towering columns, inscribed with protective litanies. Beneath that solemn gaze, we trembled in our thin gray ship-issue garments. We survivors of the voyage, only a few hundred out of Emperor knows how many originally taken, were lined up for evaluation. Ranks of unsmiling officials in hooded robes moved among us, reading names off data slates and eyeing us with clinical detachment that made my skin crawl. I stood shivering beside a boy even younger than me and an old woman whose eyes darted about like a cornered animal. The examiners began dividing us. Not by any test I could see, no written exams or trial by fire yet, just judgment passed by a glance or a probing of the soul. I saw one trembling fellow in line begin to giggle hysterically under the stress. An adept flicked his wrist and the man fell unconscious, quietly carted off by silent guards. Another woman refused to stand when ordered, collapsing to her knees in tears. She too was briskly dragged away. Whatever criteria the adepts used to sort us, it was beyond our understanding. One robed adept paused before me. I felt a light touch in my mind, like ghostly fingers sifting through my thoughts. Instinctively, I recoiled, pushing back with a surge of fear-fueled will. My defiance earned me a sharp rap on the skull from the staff he carried. "This one has spirit," he muttered to a colleague, sounding more annoyed than impressed. "Young, though." They made a note on their slate and moved on. I wasn't sure whether to feel proud or terrified. At length, the groups were finalized. The largest group, mostly the elderly, the unstable, the ones who sobbed or thrashed in terror, was led away through a set of towering adamantine doors emblazoned with a golden sunburst. We all understood what that meant, even if no one said it aloud. Beyond those doors lay the halls of the Adeptus Astronomica and the Golden Throne itself. Those psychers were being marched off to a fate as soul fuel for the Emperor or as a nameless conduits to strengthen the Astronomicon's light. Some walked with heads held high, murmuring prayers of sacrifice. Others had to be dragged or carried, wailing and begging. I caught one last glimpse of the old woman who'd stood near me. She locked eyes with me as she was pulled through the gate. In her gaze, I saw something like relief. Perhaps she was glad that her struggle would soon be over, that oblivion at least would be quick. The next group was far smaller. A few dozen men and women of stronger bearing, some wearing tattered uniforms or medals from Imperial Guard regiments. These were the more potent and disciplined psykers, I realized, the kind who'd manifested their powers on battlefields or had already served the Imperium in some capacity before being revealed as witches. An officer barked orders, and this group was led off by a cadre of black sentinels toward another exit. I later learned they were candidates for Special Scholastica Psychana War Colleges off-world, possibly even recruitment into the ranks of the Space Marines Librarius, or the Inquisition's Black Labs. That was above my station and concern. I simply watched them go, some casting pitying or envious looks back at us, leftovers. Finally, there was my group, the last few dozen, mostly youths, and a handful of meek-looking adults. We huddled together in that grand hall under the fresco of the flaming-eyed Emperor. Eventually, a tall woman in ornate midnight blue robes came forward to address us. She wore a strange bronze apparatus over her head, half circlet, half mask, etched with protective runes. Her eyes glowed faintly behind it. A psyker like us, but utterly in control. She surveyed us with a thin smile devoid of warmth.
"Welcome, initiates,"
she said, voice echoing through the still air.
"You have passed the first judgment. Rejoice, for you are still useful to the Imperium."
Her tone turned the benediction into a blade.
"I am Mistress Dacian of the Scholastica Psychana. From this moment, consider yourselves the Emperor's property. Your old lives are over. Here, you will be unmade and forged anew. If you endure, you will become sanctioned psykers, instruments of his will. If you falter..."
Her smile sharpened cruelly.
"Then you will feed his flame, and your families shall never know your names."
A nervous murmur rippled through our ranks. One boy near the front vomited on the polished floor, the stress catching up with him. Mistress Dacian did not even frown at the mess.
"You are the lucky ones,"
she continued with a note of dry irony.
"Blessed are we few who serve as his witches rather than burn as unclean mutants."
The sarcasm wasn't lost on me.
"In the days to come, you will pray for deliverance. You will know fear, pain, and despair in measures you think unbearable. But you will bear it, because the alternative is true death, of the flesh and of the soul. The Emperor protects children. Thus we must be worth protecting."
And with that uplifting introduction, our new lives began. We were stripped, scrubbed, and issued rough burlap robes marked with a small double-headed eagle over the heart. Each of us was assigned a number in place of our name. They sheared off our hair and even burned identifying codes into the flesh of our forearms, hot iron branding that left some initiates crying out, though I was too numb by then to scream. My designation was 17, 21. But a few friends I made still dared to call me by my given name when no overseers were within earshot. Officially, names were discouraged. We were all just initiate, or student, or sometimes whelp, until the day we might earn a title like sanctioned psyker, primaris, or astropath. Until then, individuality was just another thing to be burned out of us. Those first weeks inside the Scholastica Psychana were a blur of fear and adjustment. The compound became our entire world, a sealed fortress of winding corridors and towering walls that blocked out even the sun. We slept in Spartan cells not much larger than coffins, each sealed with a heavy door etched in protective sigils. Lying on a thin mat in the darkness, I often traced the carved wards on the walls with my fingers, whispering the catechism of security until I finally fell into a fitful sleep. Some mornings, the cells on either side of mine would remain eerily quiet as their occupants failed to wake victims of nightmares that hadn't stayed confined to dreams. I realized with cold certainty that even unconscious, we were fighting for our lives every single night. Life at the Scholastica Psychana fell into a brutal routine. At dawn, a klaxon would blare and we'd shamble from our cells to assembly halls for morning prayers. Imagine 100 shaven-headed adolescents and terrified adults mumbling the litany of protection in unison, voices quavering as we begged the God Emperor to shield our souls for another day. From there, it was a blur of drills and lessons. Our meals were nothing more than thin nutrient gruel ladled into metal bowls, just enough to keep us alive, never enough to fully sate our hunger. The gnawing emptiness in our bellies became just another test of endurance to harden us. They taught us how to build walls inside our minds, mental ramparts to keep the nightmares out.
Fortress of will, fortress of soul,
intoned Discipline Mistress Forensis one morning, pacing between our kneeling forms in the meditation chamber. Her boots clicked on the stone floor in rhythm with her words.
Ignore the voices that call to you, spinning tales of eldritch wonders. To listen is to be damned.
She stopped to wrap her psychane against the forehead of a girl who was nodding off in exhaustion.
Focus. Your mind is your only shield. Without it, you are meat for the demon. Do you understand?
We did. Emperor, help us, we tried our best to understand. To drive the point home, our tutors shared horror stories of those who failed in their discipline. We learned of an agri world reduced to ash when an unsanctioned witch called down the warp in a moment of despair, and of a hive city plunged into carnage when a petty psyker bargained with powers beyond. Each tale was recounted in grisly detail until we were shaking in our seats. The lesson was clear. Without the Emperor's guidance and our own iron control, we would be the cause of untold suffering. Afternoons were for controlled practice, emphasis on controlled. Under the watchful gaze of psyker mentors and the ever-present Black Sentinel guards, we attempted to use our gifts in small, carefully monitored ways. One day, they sat us in a circle around a single candle and ordered those with any spark of pyrokinesis to make its flame flicker. A simple candle flame, and yet, that session ended with three people badly burned when an overeager boy caused a gout of fire to erupt like a miniature volcano. The boy's hands were scorched, charcoal black. Instead of a medic, he received a stern lecture on overreaching his limits and was sent to evening mass with his arms in bandages. He survived by the Emperor's grace and some crude skin grafts. Others were not so lucky. Another time, we were tasked with lifting small stones using our minds, telekinesis practice. I remember scrunching up my face in concentration at the pebble before me, whispering the stabilization mantra under my breath. From thought, motion. From will, reality. I felt a tug inside my skull, a tingle down my spine. The pebble wobbled, then floated a finger's width off the ground. For one glorious second, I felt hope surge, then a stabbing pain lanced through my brain like an ice pick. Blood dripped from my nose and everything tilted sideways. I came to moments later, sprawled on the flagstones with a splitting headache, the pebble nowhere in sight. Across the training hall, an older student had managed to hurl his stone clear across the room, straight into another initiate's face, knocking out two teeth. That earned the thrower a shock prod jolt from a sentinel and extra hours of penitence in the chapel. Those who showed talent for telepathy fared no easier. Their exercises often ended in tears or terror. In one drill, a row of us sat blindfolded while a tutor projected simple emotions at us, testing if we could sense them. Joy, sorrow, anger, fear. Each washed over me like a sudden alien mood. But the real terror came when something else piggybacked on the signal. During one session, a telepathic girl suddenly went rigid, choking on a hideous giggle that wasn't hers. She tore off her blindfold, eyes rolled back, and began to laugh. A horrible, jagged cackling that echoed in our minds as much as in our ears. The instructors reacted instantly. Two of them tackled her to the ground. A third shouted for a null. A golden-armored Sister of Silence materialized from the shadows, striding to stand over the writhing girl. The sister's mere presence made every hair on my body stand up. Her blank aura smothered the warp influence like a snuffed candle. The possessed girl's laughter died to a gurgle, and she fell unconscious, eyes returning to white. They dragged her away, and we never saw her again.
"Opened herself to a whisper from the warp,"
was all Mentor Costa said afterward, grim-faced. He looked us each in the eye and warned,
"This is why you keep your wards up always. The warp is patient. It waits for the slightest crack in your defenses."
We learned that lesson well. Yet knowledge alone could not banish fear. Late one night, not long after that incident, I lay in my cot, shaken and sleepless, when I sensed a new kind of whisper at the edges of my mind. It was no nightmare of my own, but a silken voice coiling out of the immaterium itself. "Poor child, why suffer so?" it seemed to croon inside my head. A cloying warmth flooded through my thoughts, beckoning me to just let go, to open myself and be free of all the pain and dread. My heart thundered. For one awful instant, I almost listened. Instead, I bit down hard on my tongue until I tasted blood, using the sharp pain to anchor me in reality. Through tears, I forced myself to recite the litany of protection again and again, each word a feeble wall against that insidious promise. After what felt like an eternity, the unseen voice recoiled with a psychic snarl, thwarted, this time. I curled into a ball, trembling, horrified by how close I'd come to inviting damnation in. Needless to say, I did not sleep for the rest of that night. Weeks bled into months, months into years. Our existence became an endless cycle of study, drill, and vigilant paranoia. Yet gradually, almost imperceptibly, we improved. What once left us shattered and bleeding, say trying to float a simple pebble or snuff a candle from across the room, we eventually learned to do with only minor nosebleeds or headaches. We built our mental fortresses higher and thicker. I found I could force a whispering warp presence out of my head by will alone, whereas earlier I needed an instructor's intervention or the proximity of a sister. It wasn't heroism or innate genius. It was sheer brutal practice and a terror of failure that drove us to harden our minds or die trying. Out of perhaps 100 souls that started training in my batch, only a few dozen remained by the time the Scholastica Psychana deemed us ready for the ultimate tests. The rest were gone. Sacrificed to the Emperor, broken by madness, or quietly disposed of when they couldn't contain the power within them. We survivors carried their memory like a weight on our shoulders, even as we struggled not to join them. As our training neared its end, the Masters of the Scholastica prepared a final ordeal to temper our spirits. They gathered the remaining initiates, those of us who had endured every trial so far, into a deep subterranean chamber that stank of blessed oils and old fear. The walls were lined with lead and etched all over in warding sigils. Enormous iron doors sealed with purity seals clanged shut behind us. I remember the oppressive air, heavy with incense and ozone, that made it hard to breathe. In the center of the chamber lay a wide circle marked out in salt and silver. Shackled at its heart was a figure so emaciated and contorted that at first I thought it a corpse. It was alive, or rather something inside it was.
"This,"
announced Mistress Dacien from a balcony above,
"is what awaits the unprepared psyker."
She gave a curt nod to a cadre of attending psyker adepts. At their gesture, the runes around the circle flared, and the chains binding the figure rattled. The temperature in the room plummeted so fast that frost crackled across the stones. A low, guttural growl emanated from the bound figure, whose milky eyes snapped open. I will never forget the sound that came from that wretch's throat. It was a wet, tearing chorus of a dozen voices at once, some pleading, some mocking, all utterly inhuman.
"Children, come to me."
It crooned and snarled, cracked lips moving in grotesque approximation of speech. A couple of initiates screamed at the first syllables. One young man bolted for the door in blind panic, but a black sentinel clotheslined him to the floor before he got far.
"Hold your ground,"
Mentor Costa shouted, though I heard the quaver in his own voice.
"Raise your mental shields. Now!"
I steeled myself, summoning every scrap of training, every litany and mantra I could recall. The thing in the circle thrashed against its restraints, and I saw its veins crawling under the skin, pulsing with foul light. The very air around it darkened and rippled as reality warped at its presence. Then those many voices spoke again. Inside our heads this time, a psychic shriek that bypassed our ears entirely.
"I see you."
The chorus whisper echoed in the vaults of my skull, stretching the words like a slithering noose. Agony lanced through my mind. Beside me, Sable cried out and dropped to one knee, blood streaming from his nostrils. I clenched my teeth so hard I thought they'd crack and bellowed the litany of abjuration. "Emperor, deliver me from temptation. Shield my soul from the shadow." Around me, others were chanting too, a dozen frightened voices overlapping in a fractured roar of prayers and profanities as we fought to stay sane under the onslaught. The abomination in the circle laughed. A hideous telepathic cackle that set my nerves on fire. It was pushing at our minds, probing for any weakness. I felt a sudden searing pressure behind my eyes and knew it had zeroed in on me now. It was like talons scraping the inside of my skull, prying open doors I'd tried so hard to lock. For a horrifying moment, I saw, not with my physical eyes, but somewhere deep in the theater of my mind's eye, a towering silhouette of horn and hatred looming over me. Its outline writhed, made of shadow and screaming faces. I heard it offer me power in a sibilant murmur that coiled around my thoughts. Freedom from fear, it promised, and vengeance against anyone who'd ever hurt me. All mine if I would just surrender. My resolve wavered. A part of me yearned to give in, to trade my terror for that promised strength. But somewhere in the middle of that seduction, a different voice, a memory of stern instruction, cut through. "Without your mind, you are meat for the demon." "No, no." I slammed every mental door I'd built shut at once, imagining the Emperor's own light flooding my thoughts. "Begone," I howled inside, and with that, the pressure abruptly receded. The phantom horned form recoiled and evaporated from my mind's vision like mist under a hot sun. The demon, what else could it be, let out a physical scream of rage that everyone in the room heard. I opened my eyes to see the possessed host convulsing violently, its limbs twisting against the chains. The salt circle's runes flared as the entity tried to break free, only to meet a crackling wall of psychic energy that held it in. The attending adepts were chanting in high, clear tones, pouring their own will into the wards to subdue the intruder. After a few moments that felt like an eternity, the thing on the floor fell limp and silent once more. Only the sound of our ragged breathing and a few muffled sobs remained. I was alive. More than that, I was intact. My mind still my own. A quick, shaky glance around showed maybe 2/3 of us were likewise still on our feet, if barely. Several initiates lay unconscious or worse on the cold stone. One of them was Sable. He had collapsed face first, and though a medic was already kneeling by him, he did not stir. Mara stood rigid a few paces away, her hands clasped so tightly her knuckles were bone white, her lips moving in a silent prayer. She was drenched in sweat, but appeared unharmed. High Mistress Dacian's amplified voice cut through the aftermath.
"Thus you have looked into the abyss,"
she proclaimed, her tone cold.
"Not all of you survived its gaze, but those who remain, you held. You did not falter. That is what makes you worthy of the Emperor's sanction."
Worthy or not, I felt like I might collapse at any moment. My entire body was trembling, heart hammering from the psychic exertion and terror. While guards moved in to carry away the fallen and the still-bound horror, I caught Mentor Costas looking directly at me. His lined face managed a small nod of acknowledgement. I returned a feeble nod before my knees gave way and I had to sit down on the blood-spattered floor. Despite my exhaustion, a flicker of pride warred with sheer relief in my chest. I had faced the darkness and lived. By the Emperor's grace, when it truly counted, I had not broken. 2 days later, once we'd had time to recover and the administrators to tally who was left, we were assembled for our final day at the Scholastica Psychana. In the same vast basilica where our journey began, a ceremony of division and dispatch into Imperial service was held. High Confessor Koron, a withered husk of a man with cybernetic eyes, stood at a lectern, reading out names from a long scroll in a sonorous, quavering voice. This was the moment everything had been leading to. I stood among the ragged survivors in my threadbare robe, hardly daring to breathe as I waited for my fate to be spoken. One by one, names were called and destinies pronounced. Initiate Mara Tellene, Adeptus Astra Telepathica, Astropathic Choir Duty, Soul Binding Required. Mara's shoulders stiffened, but she stepped forward smartly to join the designated Astropath group. I felt a jolt in my stomach. She was to kneel at the Golden Throne itself and let the Emperor touch her soul. A great honor, yes, but one so perilous that many did not survive it. I bit my lip and silently wished her strength. Initiate Sable Venthan, Sanctioned Psyker, Scholastica, Psychana, Second Class. Assigned to Navy Medici, Adi Auxiliary. A breath of relief escaped me. That was a relatively safe assignment for Sable, posted as a support psyker tending the wounded aboard void ships, far from the front lines or the madness of soul binding. Sable, standing a few heads to my left, actually let out a soft, sobbing laugh of gratitude before regaining his composure. Then the confessor read my name and verdict. Sanctioned Psyker, Scholastica, Psychana, First Class, assigned to the Astra Militarum as a Primaris Psyker candidate. Blood rushed in my ears. For a moment, I couldn't inhale. Astra Militarum, Primaris Psyker. I was being sent to war as an authorized battle witch. A few of the others cast sideways glances at me, some sympathetic, some a touch fearful. Everyone knew Primaris Psykers often lived short, violent lives, expending themselves spectacularly on the battlefield or dying to enemy fire, or worse. I swallowed the lump in my throat and stepped forward when a clerk beckoned, acknowledging my new role. Pride and dread coiled together in my gut. I had survived training. Now the real test would begin. And so it went. The confessor's droning voice echoed through the basilica as each remaining soul was given over to their duty. Roughly a third of our number, mostly the most talented telepaths, were destined for the Astropath course to replace those whose life energies fed the Imperium's endless need for interstellar communication. The rest of us were scattered to various roles, a handful to the Inquisition service, a few to the Adeptus Mechanicus Psyker enclaves, and most, like me, to the Astra Militarum, or Navy. By the end of the announcements, we knew who we were and where we would go. I'm not sure any of us felt ready, but by that point, readiness was irrelevant. We would go where we were sent, as surely as a bullet from a gun. Mara and the other designated astropaths to be were escorted out almost immediately by a cadre of hooded adepts. They would travel to the Imperial Palace and undergo the soul-binding ritual within a matter of days. As she left, Mara caught my eye and offered a tight, brave little smile. I nodded and tried to smile back. Emperor, I was going to miss her. Those of us not undergoing soul binding spent the next day in a kind of anxious limbo, awaiting news of our comrades. When the survivors of the ritual finally returned, it was a sight both awe-inspiring and heartbreaking. Of the 20 or so aspirants taken to the Golden Throne, barely half emerged alive from the ordeal. They were carried back on stretchers or helped along by Medicaid staff, their bodies frail and minds utterly drained. Mara walked under her own power, but she was a pale shadow of herself. A strip of white cloth was wrapped over her eyes, stained red where blood had seeped through. I rushed to her side as an attendant gently lowered her to a bench. She reached out gropingly until I caught her hand. "I'm here," I murmured, squeezing her fingers. My throat felt thick. She turned her bandaged face toward me. Her voice was a raw whisper.
I heard him, brother. I felt him inside my soul.
Fresh blood tears oozed beneath the bandage as she trembled.
It was like standing in the heart of the sun,
she managed. Despite the clear pain in her voice, there was a fragile smile on her cracked lips.
He thanked me.
I bowed my head, tears of my own welling up. Mara had survived touching the Emperor's mind, but at great cost. She and all the surviving astropaths would pay for that divine communion with their sight, and perhaps some of their sanity. The trainers told us it was a necessary sacrifice. By surrendering their eyes, these astropaths were blessed with a portion of the Emperor's own vision, and their souls were forever shielded from the warp's predations. Maybe so, but seeing Mara that way, broken and exalted all at once, filled me with equal parts pride and sorrow. That night, the newly soul-bound astropaths were gathered and moved to the City of Sight, where they would begin their true service in telepathic choirs. I only had a brief moment to say farewell to Mara. We embraced gently. For once, no overseers bothered to scold us for breaking decorum.
Live, brother,
she whispered to me, using that familial term we'd adopted in the dark of our dormitory whispers. Her face was bandaged, but I knew she was looking toward me with whatever newfound inner eye the Emperor had granted her.
Live and serve him well. We each have our part.
I will, I promised, my voice thick. I wanted to say so much more. Thank you. I love you as a sister. I'll never forget you. But the words jammed in my throat. In the end, I just squeezed her hand and nodded, realized belatedly she couldn't see it, and then said, Go with his light, Mara. She managed a faint chuckle at that.
I have little choice,
she replied, lifting her bandaged face toward the distant golden glow of the palace. And then she was gone, guided away by attendants, one blind young woman amid dozens, off to her destiny. I never saw Mara again, but I carry the memory of her final smile, full of pain. Yes, but also radiant with unshakable faith. The following morning, the remaining handful of us, now fully sanctioned psychers awaiting deployment, underwent one last rite on Scholastica grounds. In a stark ceremony in the courtyard, we knelt in the gray dawn and swore our binding oaths before a granite altar draped with the Imperial Aquila. We pledged our lives, our souls, and our unwavering obedience to the Golden Throne, reciting every line of the sanctioning liturgy as drilled. I spoke each word firmly. After all we'd endured, loyalty wasn't just expected. It had been branded into our bones. Upon the conclusion of our vows, attendants moved down the line to mark us each with the final seal of sanction. A white-hot branding iron, shaped in the twin-headed eagle of the Imperium and the sigil of the Astra Telepathica, was pressed into the flesh of my upper arm. I had thought myself familiar with pain by then, but that branding, Emperor's Mercy, it was agony unlike any other. My vision flashed white. I bit my tongue hard enough to taste blood, determined not to scream. The smell of burning meat, of my own scorched skin, churned my stomach. Smoke curled from my arm as the iron seared the symbol permanently into me. My head swam, but I remained kneeling. I would not disgrace myself by collapsing. When at last the brand was lifted, I sagged with relief, gasping quietly, tears of pain cooling on my cheeks. But I had not cried out. In that moment, more than any before, I felt I had finally proven my worth. They did not stop there. One by one, we were fitted with our new war gear, or rather, our restraint gear. A custodian came to me and locked a heavy metallic gorget around my neck, a Psychana collar. It was a thick band of iron inscribed with intricate psychoreactive circuits and purity seals. I immediately felt its effect, a faint pressure around my temples, the psychic equivalent of a leash. The collar would siphon away excess warp energy whenever I used my powers, mitigating the risk of any surges or uncontrolled phenomena. In theory, it would help keep me safe from myself, and everyone else safe from me. In practice, it was an ever-present reminder that I lived on a razor's edge. Then came the final Maccab gift. Each of us was presented with a small sheathed dagger, the so-called Mercy Blade. Mentor Costas handed me mine personally. It was a simple blade, the kind a guardsman might use for last resort. Costas met my eyes with a sad, stern look. "You know what this is for," he said quietly. I nodded, my mouth suddenly dry. Of course we knew. If the day came when the whispers grew too loud and our control slipped, when a demon's claw was at the threshold of our soul, this blade was the Emperor's Mercy in our own hand, a final chance to do our duty and deny the darkness its prize. I tied the dagger at my waist, its weight oddly comforting against my hip. I prayed I would never have cause to draw it. At long last, it was done. We had entered the Scholastica Psychana as unwanted whelps, the dregs of humanity. We were leaving as sanctioned psychers of the Imperium, still widely unwanted, to be sure, but now officially necessary. They gave us fresh robes of office, deep indigo vestments traced with protective sigils in gold thread. Before changing, I caught a glimpse of myself in a shard of mirror propped against a wall. A gaunt, hollow-eyed figure stared back. My head was smooth-shaven, faint scars crisscrossed my temples, legacy of a cranial implant, and forearms, reminders of punishments and close calls. And on my forehead, a freshly tattooed aquila marked me as a sanctioned psyker of the Scholastica Psychana. I barely recognized myself. The scared boy who had boarded the black ship was nowhere in those eyes. In his place stood something else, something harder and much, much older. I wasn't sure if that realization should make me proud or simply sad, perhaps a bit of both. Before any sentimentality could take root, we were briskly marched to a landing pad where a shuttle waited to ferry us to a larger transport in orbit. I stood there in the open air, a free man in theory, but surrounded by handlers and guards who would not hesitate to kill me at the slightest provocation. It was the first time I'd seen the sky with my own eyes since coming to Terra. The morning light was feeble and tinged with brown smog. Still, I gulped it in as if I'd been drowning for years. In a way, I had been. High above, the titanic silhouette of the Imperial Palace loomed over the horizon, golden spires piercing the clouds. A commissar in his pressed black coat oversaw our boarding. He prowled along the line of us as we waited to ascend the shuttle ramp. At one point, he stopped and addressed us en masse, his face curled in a contemptuous sneer.
"Listen well, witches,"
he barked, voice razor sharp.
"You live by the Emperor's grace alone. The moment you deviate, the second I suspect any one of you of consorting with the unnatural, you will be ended. No hesitation, no second chances."
He tapped the grip of his bolt pistol for emphasis and bared his teeth in what might have been a grin. Some of my fellow psychers blanched. A few bowed their heads meekly. I simply fixed my gaze forward and remained at attention. After everything I'd been through, a commissar's threats held little novelty. A bolt round to the skull? If it came to that, I'd counted a quicker end than many alternatives. At last, we filed into the shuttle's hold and strapped ourselves into the battered metal benches. The engines rumbled to life, the deck shuddering under my boots. Through a porthole, I watched the Scholastica Psychana recede, its black towers and walled cloisters shrinking until they were just one more dark blot amid the endless construction of the Imperial Palace sprawling across the mountains. That austere fortress had been my entire universe for years. It was there that I had known terror and pain beyond description, but also camaraderie, purpose, and a twisted kind of enlightenment. Now I was leaving it behind forever. As the shuttle lifted skyward, I realized with a start that I was no longer afraid of my own nature. Wary, yes, always vigilant, but the paralyzing fear that once gripped me whenever I felt the warp stir in my mind was gone. I trusted myself, at least more than before. They had taught me control. Hard, uncompromising control. I flexed my hand slowly and felt a gentle buzz of psychic energy within, like the humming of a distant tune. If I wanted, I knew I could make the empty metal cup on the bench in front of me rattle or even rise into the air. Once that notion would have horrified me. Now it felt almost comforting. The power was mine to command, not the other way around. So long as my will remained iron. The shuttle broke through Terra's atmosphere, and the blackness of space engulfed the view. I peered out at the stars, the same stars that, through my nightmares, had whispered and watched. They didn't seem so foreboding now. I allowed myself a small, crooked smile. The hardest part of my life so far was over. Yet, in the grim darkness of the future that awaited me, I suspected those hellish years of training, horrific as they were, might one day feel like a mercy. After all, I had survived the unseen horrors of sanctioned psyker training. Whatever came next, be it the blood-soaked trenches of a war-torn world or the haunted depths of the void, it couldn't possibly be worse than what I had already endured. At least, that's what I told myself. I gently touched the prayer beads they'd given each of us as a final token, and quietly mouthed the litany of protection one more time. The Emperor protects. In that moment, I truly believed it. He must have been watching over me all this time. How else could I have come so far? I was a sanctioned psyker now, a necessary weapon, a walking nightmare to some and a salvation to others. The nightmares of my past had prepared me for the nightmares to come, and whatever horrors await out there in the galaxy, well, they ought to be just a little afraid of me.